We Talk Malls.
Äußerst spannend. Sollte man probieren.
Wir drei sind auf jeden Fall Scotch-Trinker, oder?
Double Oak, doppelt gut.
Doppelt geil.
Ich biete meinen Gästen auch nichts an, was ich nicht selber trinken würde.
Ich weiß, ich Weihnachten trinke, das ist mein Weihnachtswhisky.
Absolut erwachsen, vor allem weltweit.
Am Ende zählt, schmeckt oder schmeckt nicht. Einen wunderschönen guten Abend in die Runde. Wir starten ganz, ganz kurz auf Deutsch. Schön, dass ihr alle da seid. Wie ihr seht, der Bildschirm ist heute prall gefüllt mit Menschen. Wir haben gleich zwei Gäste. Das ist auch eine Seltenheit. Wir werden gleich auf Englisch rüber switchen. Aber nur, dass ihr Bescheid wisst, wir nehmt eure Fragen natürlich gerne, stellt sie auch auf Deutsch im Chat. Ihr könnt sie auf Englisch stellen, dann blende ich sie ein. Ihr könnt sie aber gerne auch auf Deutsch stellen, dann wird Marc für uns übersetzen. Nein. irgendjemand wird sich erbarmen und die Übersetzung machen. Also genießt diese internationale Runde. And I think we are switching to English right now with our international live stream today. Welcome everyone. Let's do a little introduction. I would say I say hi, I'm Malte, same guy as always. Klaus, introduce yourself.
Hallo, schönen guten Abend. Good evening. Max kennt mich schon, von daher kann ich das auf Deutsch machen. Ich bin in der Runde, weil ich in Deutschland und Österreich der Importeur für den Whisky bin, der heute Abend vorgestellt wird, oder die Whiskys. Und ja, Whiskyhändler, man kennt mich vielleicht von der ein oder anderen Whiskymesse und bin seit so ungefähr 40 Jahren beim Thema Whisky aktiv.
Ja. Okay. I'm next or our guest?
Yeah. Mark, take over.
Let's
go the usual
Hello,
round.
Hello, I'm Mark.
Hello, this is Florian speaking. First time in our international English edition. And now we welcome our guest, Max.
Yeah, good evening. Guten Abend. Delighted to be on the show and talking about our whiskey. My name's Max, as you can read. I'm the co-founder of White Peak Distillery in a part of England called Derbyshire, in the central part of England. And we make principally single malt whiskey, which we started releasing about 15 months ago. So a relatively new distillery. And yeah, really pleased to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Thank you for coming. We have a couple of messages in German here saying good evening, or as we say in Northern Germany, simply moin. You can say that all day long, which is wonderful. And we have another Florian here who's in the hospital and says thank you for giving me company. So get well, Florian, please. And Max, great to have you here. Before we try any of your whiskey, maybe you can give us a small introduction to the distillery and tell us about why you wanted to start a distillery in England.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. So as I mentioned, we're called White Peak Distillery. We're in an area in the center of England, which is a national park. It's called the Peak District. And we're in the southern half, which is called the White Peak, and hence the name of the distillery. We also sit in a UNESCO World Heritage Site, made famous because of industrialists and entrepreneurs from which the Industrial Revolution in the UK was spawned. And we are in what used to be a wire works, so it dates back to the 1870s, and they used to make cable and wire products that they exported all over the world, and were very successful for well over 100 years. There's a picture of our whiskey, or there was right there, and there's a picture of the wire works actually. So it's right on one of the major rivers in the UK. Which is really, really a lovely spot, but also interestingly, we use the river water for our condenser cooling in our whiskey making. But yeah, our brand's called Wireworks, very much a kind of rooted in where we're making the whiskey. And also the region we're in generally in the UK has been a sort of a center for brewing, certainly in England, for many, many years. Not necessarily for whiskey. We're the first whiskey distillery in the region, but there's a real brewing heritage in our region. And that's one of the reasons why that sort of brewing side of the whiskey making process has been a real focus for us since we started the distillery. In fact, it was always part of the plan 7 years ago. So we spend a lot of time looking at the flavor that can be generated during mashing, during fermentation, use of yeast. And indeed, we will work with a fairly large craft brewery 15 miles up the road from us. We collect live yeast from them every single week that we use in our fermentation. So this kind of brewing heritage is, you know, very much a big part of the kind of flavor profile of our whiskey. Yeah, and we started the business 7 years ago. It took 2 years to refurbish the former Wireworks, the buildings that we're in, and install the distillery. And then we started making whiskey in April 2018. Just over 5 years ago. And as I mentioned earlier, we released our first Wireworks whiskey in February 2022, so just over 15 months ago. We're so far mainly domestic focused, but, you know, delighted to have Klaus as a partner in Germany and indeed in Austria. So there's some of our whiskey now available in mainland Europe, which is brilliant.
And you just got, I think, 87 points from Whiskey Fun, right? From Serge.
If
that's correct.
Yeah, we did. And that was, we were super pleased with that. I think it was Monday this week. It was certainly within the last few days. He was very generous with, the things he had to say about our whiskey. So it certainly was a nice day for the whole team when I shared that review on our group WhatsApp.
Great. So how did you start with the idea? Why did you want to start a distillery? Was it just, are you a whiskey fan and things just developed?
Yeah, exactly. Things got out of hand. I'm a whiskey fan in the sense that I've always enjoyed whiskey, certainly from my kind of adolescence onwards, which was something I inherited from my father, who, you know, still likes whiskey. And I think it was over around about 12 years ago, I met someone who was starting a small urban distillery in England. And at the time, there was only one English distillery that I was aware of, and I didn't even know that one particularly well. I heard the story of this kind of new small craft distillery that was planned, and it kind of left its mark on me. And I think I got home that evening and said to Claire, my wife, who runs the business with me, that, why can't you make whiskey in England? And of course, there's no reason why you can't. And you know, I'd love to do that. And, you know, let's look into it. And I think, it was almost like a 5-year journey and a dream that, eventually in sort of 2015, we got to the point where it was, I was kind of becoming annoying domestically, because I was looking at this whiskey project and almost a sense of, look, you either need to do this or you just need to kind of drop the whole concept. So, I think there was a couple of things going on in my life at the time, but it just felt that, there was a moment where, kind of just getting on with it was the right thing to do. So, we're not from a drinks or spirits background. We like whiskey. We love the kind of romance of making whiskey, and I've visited a lot of distilleries over the years. But we decided that, it would be a really interesting thing to do, to start making whiskey in a region of England where it'd never been made before. And then we started to think about, you know, some of the details of the style of whiskey that we'd make and how we'd hopefully find a place in the market for this new whiskey from Derbyshire. So, very much a dream, you know, born out of being a whiskey fan.
Great. Awesome. Sounds wonderful.
So you chose the location for your distillery probably rather close to where you're from or where you live, or how did you select your site where to
build your... that's pretty much right. We had kind of three criteria. So I wanted to be by a river. That's just a kind of romantic sense for me of where I expect to find distilleries, and based on distilleries I've visited over the years. I mean, obviously the coastal ones are by the sea, but we wanted to be by a river. We wanted to try and find a building that had an interesting history, some a backstory, a sort of a former life. And then finally, we selfishly, we wanted to have a relatively small commute. So kind of we set ourselves a sort of 15-mile type radius. So those are the criteria. And there aren't that many rivers around, and there aren't that many sort of old, unused, large buildings. So, all of a sudden you can start to kind of narrow the search down.
Okay, so maybe we just get into the whiskey, but before we do, I just want to show your bottles, because I think they are gorgeous. Just put it right in front of my face. Camera, do your work. Right. So you got the cables on like up here, right?
So absolutely. So that was a that bottle of itself was an 18-month project, mainly my wife, Claire, and we worked with an external designer who also had a glass specialist. But the bottle is a metaphor for a cable, and it tells part of the story of where we're making whiskey. So, many people will perhaps not get the opportunity to come to the distillery, but the bottle starts to tell the story of the wireworks. And we were very grateful to receive a nice global award for I think in the contemporary category. We received an award from the IWSC last year for that bottle, and it's been a nice sort of adjunct to the whiskey making, that the bottles is a lovely design, and people have enjoyed kind of owning it. It also feels really nice in your hand because of those kind of facets. You don't feel like you're going to drop it, which is a nice thing with something you enjoy drinking.
And I think it shows like the passion behind it, if you take care on every little detail, like not only in the whiskey making but also in the packaging as well. I think that's a nice touch, not to put it in a standard liquor bottle, which would be fine, I think, when you're starting out, because designing a bottle and having it made for you must be quite expensive, I reckon.
It is. I think I guess like many things in life, you get one first chance to make a good impression, and we felt it was an additional kind of investment that was worthwhile, given our sort of aspirations for the whiskey. And thankfully it worked out well, and it's been well received. So I think that's been with hindsight a good decision, but you're right, it does come at a significant upfront cost.
I guess. So do we want to start with the first whiskey? Guys, what do you think?
Yes. I'd love to.
Or do you just want to talk? That's up to you. Good.
I also saw we already got quite a number of questions in our chat that are all, at least most of them are connected to your ways of work, how you mold, where you mold, who molds for you, what material your molding
mesh tons
are made of.
Yeah. So maybe we just try to answer them one by one, so everyone gets his or her answer. So Ralph is asking about your fermentation time. So how long is it, and the temperatures, and are you using wooden or metal fermenters?
Yeah. Okay. So I guess in reverse order. So the fermenters are made of stainless steel. We don't have any dynamic temperature control, but the tanks are insulated. So, you know, the winter times where the distillery is can get quite cold. And we think about the insulation in terms of trying to even out the rate of temperature change so that things don't get cold or hot too quickly. In terms of length of fermentation, it's varied a bit over time and even in the seasons now, depending on whether it's relatively warm or cold. But we are doing a 6-day fermentation.
We might have
lost him.
Can you still
hear? Yeah. No, you're back.
Yep.
Yeah, we do a 6-day fermentation. We don't control the temperature. We just kind of we let the temperature, you know, go where it goes. But that helps to generate some of the flavors that we want in the wash for distillation purposes.
6 days is quite long, right?
Yeah, it is.
Long fermentation.
Yeah, and I think I guess the people talk about the standard, certainly in Scotch, is sort of generally 48 to 60 hours.
Yeah.
And by that point in time, really the alcohol has been created. And so, you know, if the focus is purely on efficiency and creating alcohol, then it kind of begs the question, you know, why would you ferment for longer than 60 hours? And of course, the reason is because the fermentation is going to go into a sort of bacterial phase where you get some interesting flavors that indeed, you know, carry across into the distillate. So that's the main reason for us. And because we're not mass producing, you know, the fermentation is the focus is really all on flavor, not on efficiency.
You just said you're not mass producing. Udo asked, what is your capacity, or how much do you produce right now, and are you using everything for your original bottlings?
Yeah, so we produce around about 60,000 liters of pure alcohol. We don't make whiskey for anybody else, so it's all intended to be in our bottles in the long run. In capacity terms, I suppose we could make more. We currently do 5 mashes a week, so we don't work on a Sunday, and because of our 6-day fermentation, the kind of schedule is 5 mashes. So but in theory, we could go to 7 mashes a week, and then we could go to 2 shifts a day. And we've got the sufficient washbacks to do that. So we're operating at 60,000 LPA, but we could conceivably be up to between 120 and 150,000 if we chose to, you know, maximize what we could with the equipment we've got.
So there's a lot of room for growth. That's also
good. That's right. We had 4 additional fermenters fitted in January this year, which I ordered well over a year ago, 15-16 months ago. But I guess in this 15-16 month period, whilst we've been waiting, Yeah, I mean, you know, energy prices have gone through the roof. That's had a knock-on effect on the cost of glass. It's had a knock-on effect on the cost of malt. It's made whiskey making right now, or certainly in the last year, you know, relatively expensive. And so whilst we've got this additional capacity for future growth, we're kind of just assessing, you know, when is the right time for us to use it.
Yeah. So Malt is already with the nose in the glass.
Of course, of course. So what I really love about your whiskey, and when I first tried it, Klaus was kind enough to send me a bottle of this batch number 3 in, I think, earlier this year in January or maybe December last year. And when I opened it and left it in the glass for maybe 5 to 10 minutes, I think it's an amazingly well-rounded whiskey for a young single malt whiskey. So how do you achieve this? Is it casks? Is it long fermentation? Is it in the distillation? Is it everything combined? I think it's one of the nicest, smoothest malts I tried at this age.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And there's a fair amount of science around whiskey making, but then there's a fair amount of things that, you know, people don't necessarily understand all the science of. We certainly, when we started, because we didn't have a background in whiskey making, you know, we felt we had to get a really good understanding of every single part of the process. And so, you know, I mentioned before, but, you know, we were really focused on how we can generate interesting flavors, you know, during mashing, during fermentation, during, you know, distillation. And so things like the long fermentation, for example, we also use live brewer's yeast, which we collect every week from a local brewery called Thornbridge Brewery. We believe that adds some of the kind of interesting flavor characteristics that make our sort of whiskey from Derbyshire what it is. And we also run our stills pretty slowly to try and capture the flavors from the fermentation that we want in the distillate. And then I think the other thing about the spirit is it's lightly peated. So our mash bill contains about 20% of the malt barley we use has been peated. And I think that kind of background flavor and complexity, you know, is also contributing to what's in the glass. And then, sure, finally, you know, no one can argue that, you know, the cask or maturation is not important. But for us, you know, all those elements have been a really big focus for the distillery. But then talking about casks, so in this particular release, it's a combination of ex-wine STR casks, so refurbished ex-wine casks from the Douro Valley in Portugal, and then also ex-bourbon barrels, in this case from Heaven Hills Distillery in Kentucky. And broadly speaking, it's about 75% ex-wine, 25% ex-bourbon.
Okay. So, guys, what do you get when you put your nose into the glass, as Florian just said?
Very sweet, fruity. Yeah.
Do you get any peat? Because I think in the nose, like in the aroma, you don't get that much of a peated impression, right? It's just really, really lightly peated for me.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think sometimes people, when they think of peat, they think of, you know, Islay peat, which is very kind of, yeah, almost like medicinal. And there's certainly none of that on the nose. But I would agree, it's more on the palate, and even then, it's a background. I mean, in terms of peat levels, we in the distillate, it's at about 3 parts per million. In the in the mash bill, it's about 10 parts per million. But, you know, typically you will see that whatever you've got in your mash bill, you know, reduces by that kind of proportion by the time it's been, yeah, distilled and matured. But yeah, I'd agree. I think there's definitely fruit on the nose, and that's quite a characteristic of our spirits. In this case, kind of some, you know, dried fruits, I would say, kind of raisins, apricots, but certainly then beyond that, things like, you know, ripe banana, maybe some other orchard kind of apple-y fruits.
Yeah. We just got a question. When do you plan to release the first age statement whiskey, or do you plan to release any?
Yeah, we don't have any plans for an age statement. It's not an aspirational thing for us. You know, we hopefully people enjoy the whiskey and that we can talk about the reasons why it tastes the way it does, but it's not really for us a function of age. And I know that's, you know, certainly in the UK and certainly in the Scotch industry, that was historically the kind of the identifier. But I think with with world whiskey these days, I think that kind of myth that quality and age are always related, I think has been bust. And yeah, we certainly want to talk about how we make whiskey, and hopefully people enjoy it irrespective of age. So yeah, we've no plans to do an age statement release.
Okay. So I think we should give it a try, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead.
Okay. Cheers, guys.
Look for all the apricots that we already found.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers. Prost. Hmm.
Yeah.
Mm.
So now we get the awkward, everyone is savoring the whiskey silence. We get every stream and someone has to say anything, something.
Yeah, sometimes we even celebrate this. So I think there's time for celebrating this time as well. I feel I have more of the peat in the nose than I have in the palate.
Yes. Okay. It's okay. Exactly the other way around
for okay.
me. So I get a lot more of the peat, I'm sorry. Yeah.
A kind of combination, wood and peat. And this one, this two aromas are very comparable, very good together. Good.
Yeah, they are making a good combination, right?
Thank you.
You get some of those dry, almost earthy wooden notes, and then the peated ones as well.
Yeah, certainly for me, I think that some of those light peat notes are more on the finish, there's kind of maybe a bit of chocolatey orange kind of brandy earlier on, and then or kind of brandy basket, and then kind of fading into a little bit of that peat.
But it stays quite long.
Yeah, it lingers, right?
It lingers, exactly, which is not too usual for a 3-year-old whiskey.
Klaus, you're muted. Excuse. Yes.
Yeah. Unmuted. I think it's got a certain wooden dryness in the end as well, which makes it taste older than it actually is. That's part of the impressive thing. So when you taste it in the aftertaste, it's get dry, which you usually just get from older whiskies. So that's what I find quite impressive.
Yeah. Definitely. I think some of it might be the STR cask, right? Because we had one stream we did only with STR matured whiskies. And I think STR casks are great for making an impression that the whiskey is older than it actually is. Yeah. So it's kind of a a faster maturation, right? Because these casks are so active.
Yeah, that's right. They are a very active cask. They're not that far removed from the virgin oak. By the time they've been refurbished and retoasted and recharred. So they are active. And I think one of the things that we feel as well with our distillate is the combination with the SDR, it gives it quite a rich sort of mouthfeel. It's not kind of overly oily, but it's a good feeling about the whiskey, just, physically in the mouth. And I think the SDR does help contribute to that.
But the more wine-like aromas are not too present from the SDR cask, right? Because I feel I have a lot of these, what you already talked about, dry fruits, apricots, but there are no resins, maybe a little, but no, I'm missing the word, unfortunately, fresh resins.
Yeah. I think that's true. I think the reality is that the refurbishing process of the cask, it certainly dampens down quite significantly the wine that was previously in the cask. I mean, it's still present in the fiber, in the wood fiber, so it's got a part to play. But the refurbishing certainly kind of dials that down.
Flo, do you mean grapes? Yeah, exactly. Right.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Grapes. Yeah. Chat is always right.
As always, Ralph is helping me out when I'm mincing my words.
I'm just going through the questions. You already talked about the yeast because we had a question about the yeast. And I think there were a couple of questions about the barley as well. So this one is, where do you get your barley from, and where do you, is there a malting involved, or do you do your own malting?
Yeah, so we use English barley, and it's malted before it arrives at the distillery. So we're not doing our own malting, and we use two different sort of types of malt barley, as I mentioned. So the large proportion is completely unpeated, and then roughly 20% of the mash bill is heavily peated. And then we combine those two malts together before we mill. So we mill the malt ourselves on site. We combine it together, and then our mash is from that combination of those two malt types. More recently, but not present in this particular whiskey, but more recently we've started working with a local farmer who is laying down some barley about 10 miles from the distillery. But it's probably going to be another maybe 3 years before the first whiskey we release with that local malt. It's English barley, and it's one of the there's generally about four approved varieties in the UK for distilling. This is called Laureate, the malt that we use. In fact, we were at the maltings where it supplies us early this week. The maltings are called Crisp, and they had a nice open day on Wednesday to show all the brewers and the distillers around use their product.
Great. Are you planning on using English oak anytime in the future? Because
we have filled just a single cask so far of virgin English oak. Okay. It's not in terms of English oak supply, it's quite limited. It's obviously relatively expensive, and so the on the supply side, you know, it's not widely available. I mean, there were very, very few, hardly anybody at all doing coopering in England. So it's, yeah, it's not a kind of common part of the kind of English whiskey scene. But yeah, we filled our first one, so you know we'll see how that goes.
Okay, sounds really interesting because when I worked for Magmyra, we had a lot of Swedish oak, of course, and I think Fetterkern did Scottish oak. So maybe you can do English oak.
Yeah, no, and I think I've had some of the Magmyra Swedish oak whiskey. Yeah. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's special because it's a pretty harsh flavor profile if you do the Swedish oak ones. So Florian just emptied his first glass and is drinking water right now, which is of course completely wrong. So we have to save him from a healthy lifestyle.
Oh, thank you very much.
One more question. Max, you said that you use a mash bill of 20% peated, 80% unpeated. Do you have any casks that you want to talk about that contain something else, a different mash bill? So probably 100% peated or 100% unpeated or anything else?
Yeah, so we've... as yet, again, nothing that's been released, but we've done a few mashes in the last 3 or 4 years, generally kind of 1 to 2 month campaigns with different mash bills. So one of them, for example, we work with the local brewery, so Thornbridge Brewery, from where we get the live yeast. And that mash bill, so it's not single malt. It was a sort of combined mash bill of chocolate malt, some dark malt, some beech smoke malt, actually from Germany, and also some oats. So we ran that for about a month back in October 2020. Yet more recently, as I mentioned, we've been using English barley from our local farmer, and that is completely unpeated. So twice a year in the last 2 years, we've been running about a 1 month campaign. So 2 months in total in the year with local barley that's completely unpeated. So these are all things that, yeah, will be kind of, yeah, hitting the bottle at some point in the future.
When you mentioned that, yeah, that you have a campaign of completely unpeated malt, do you see differences in the change of campaign? So from peated to unpeated and from unpeated to peated? Because we had a guest that shared with us, for example, the Peat Week from Balvenie, and they do something similar. So they produce peated with peated barley or peated malt 1 week a year, and they always see these, I don't know what did they call it, red tails or something like that, where they had the switch over from the peated to the unpeated, where still some of the peat is left in the
like in the production,
in their tanks,
their tanks, and in their stills.
Yeah. So I mean, so we're generally pretty careful to make sure we separate the two. So we will make sure that we sort of empty the tanks from, you know, whenever we're switching, so that we don't start to, you know, combine those two. But there's a very significant difference. Certainly, if we're talking about local barley, for example, which is unpeated, we also produce the whiskey in a different way because we want to emphasize some of the malty flavors, so we can have this conversation about it being local malt. So we mash in a different way. We don't alter the fermentation length, but we mash in a different way, and then we also alter our distillation cut points. all to try and bring through more of those kind of malty, biscuity type flavors. So, just briefly in terms of detail, when we're mashing for our normal campaign, so for our lightly peated single malt, we do a lot of recirculation during mashing to try and produce a clear wort that's going to help produce kind of fruity flavors during fermentation. When we're using the local barley and we want to try and get more of those malty, biscuity flavors, we don't do any recirculation at all, and we run the rakes in the mash tun, which basically means that we're keeping it cloudy rather than getting a clear wort. And that helps to produce, you know, more of the malty flavors in the spirit. And then we alter the cut points completely with the distillation. So, yeah, we've really enjoyed working with the local barley and just in identifying different ways to make whiskey that kind of emphasizes that kind of localness.
So do you plan to release this as a separate release where you could have a bottle of local barley, or will you use it as a portion of batches or something like that?
Yeah, Florian, we will release it separately. That's not to say that we might find some sort of sweet spot with some sort of vatting in the future, but the intention is that we would be releasing single malt using this local barley, and we would identify that on the label, and everyone would get to hopefully, you know, understand the difference in kind of taste profile because of the way we've made the whiskey.
Awesome, thank you. So
yeah, are we talking about the second whiskey 45 minutes into the stream? perfectly fine. We're doing the Thomas Gottschalk, as we say. Taking over time today. It's no worries at all. So the second one is the batch number 8,
six.
Right?
Six.
Yeah. And the kind of couple of key differences between this and the one we had previously, but one is more about maturation. So there's more American oak in this batch number 6 compared to batch number 3. And we slightly altered the proportion of ex-wine STRs to ex-bourbon. But the when I talk about American oak, so the ex-wine STRs that we use, we have about 6 different varieties. In most cases, these casks were originally coopered from American oak. When they refurbished, we have the ability to talk to the cooperage about toasting levels and char levels, but also we've asked them to swap out the heads on the cask, so the ends, swap out the original American oak and put in French oak. The previous whiskey that we tried, batch number 3, had STR casks with some French oak heads. This one we're now tasting has got STR casks, but they're 100% American oak, and obviously the ex-bourbon are 100% American oak. So one of the differences between the two is just there's no use of French oak during maturation.
Yeah,
and we're going a little bit higher in ABV.
ABV, right? Yeah.
So how do you choose your ABV? Because every bottling we're trying today has a different ABV. You're always over 46%, I guess, but the rest is up to you, up to your mood.
Yeah, exactly. I think, as I'm sure people are aware, that 46% is, you know, at least understood to be an ABV where if you're not chill filtering and not adding any artificial flavoring, but chill filtering in particular, 46% is the ABV, you know, above which, you know, you should hopefully not have any problems with kind of without not having that chill filtration. But then above that, yeah, it's a really just an internal discussion amongst me, the distillers, what ABV we think a particular release, presents itself well at. And as I was saying earlier, a lot of our releases have been, close to 50%, either side of 50% for us. We enjoy them neat, and we just feel that our spirit is, is a nice, approachable spirit, at those kind of strengths.
So how many times do you have to taste it before you decide?
Yeah, I mean, the permutations are endless. So, we tend to give ourselves a few benchmarks. So we'll maybe have some samples at 47, at 48, at 49, at 50, and then we'll have a little bit of a sort of internal blind tasting, and everyone has to rate. And then we try and pick a couple of favorites, and then we isolate it down to the firm favorite from there.
Okay, because you're getting quite precise, like 47.7%. It's not just an educated guess, I guess.
There is some precision in it. But in all honesty, I'm also not a big fan of round numbers. So we just think that something other than 0.0 is is kind of just more interesting to talk about.
Okay, so let's give it a try, right? Cheers.
Yeah.
Guys.
Cheers.
I already enjoyed smelling this batch a lot, because it's vastly different from what we've seen. Even though some things are very comparable, it's also partially SCR, it's also partially bourbon cask, but the nosing is the nose is completely different for me. It has something. It's a lot more fresh fruits. It's a lot of citrus and
citrusy,
and,
right?
Yeah, and oranges maybe, and it's much more fresh. And I don't have any hints of peat in this one.
But that the last part could be because of the first one you already tried. So
obviously,
it adjusted. But I think it's even for me. It's even more peaty on the palate, or smoky, I should say, not peaty, but smoky. But maybe that's just a personal thing. But I also get a lot of citrusy notes, like lemon or lemon zest, maybe.
Yeah, I think I've certainly got in my tasting notes kind of orange marmalade, those kind of those citrus notes. So yeah, that's interesting that you're both picking up the same.
Orange marmalade is vastly different in Germany than it is in the UK. Which is great for me, because if I buy a glass of English orange marmalade, I tend to have it for myself, because my wife doesn't like the bitter flavors.
Okay, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah, but I would agree that I think for me at least, that kind of there's a little bit of spice, maybe pepper, along with the peat smoke on the finish.
I have to get back to the first one. I'm sorry to make it even longer today, but I emptied the first one prematurely. Now
I have to. I think the second is not as dry as the first one is.
Yes.
So it's a bit bit sweeter in the aftertaste, and a bit less dry. Not that woodiness that I find in the first one.
Yeah.
Which is it's the sweetie compared.
That is exactly what I wanted to note as well, that this wooden dryness, and especially in the aftertaste, is much more lightly or even almost unnoticeable for the second one. Yeah.
So I think Mark prefers the first one, right? Because you get these dry, woody notes, and that's your thing, right?
Normally, yes. But now, I don't know. I also go back to the first one and taste it, and will taste it again. But normally, I like these wood and spicy notes.
Ralf is tasting the same whiskey as well. He's writing it's light fruit, orange zest, lime and a little bit of what do you call it?
Vanilla
sugar.
Vanilla sugar. Yeah. No, definitely some sweet vanilla. I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Probably also goes back to the bourbon casks.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. I think. Yeah, that would be a characteristic. I agree, Florian.
Yes, you want to go ahead and talk about the third whiskey, which is the Virgin Oak Finish, you called it.
Yeah, so I guess I'll just introduce it. So the first two whiskeys we've tried this evening were both vattings from full maturation. And this is, as the name would suggest, is a whiskey that's been finished in virgin oak. So we took the whiskey from ex-bourbon barrels that had been matured for at least 3 years, so it was already whiskey. And then we dumped those barrels. We vatted the spirit together at that point, and then we refilled some virgin oak barrels, American oak that we get from a cooperage called Calvin Cooperage in Kentucky. And we fill again a variation of the virgin oak barrels. Some different toast levels, different char levels, but predominantly in this particular virgin oak finish, the majority of the virgin oak barrels were a medium toast with a medium char, which is that's kind of the I suppose the benchmark for bourbon producers.
I was quite surprised by this whiskey. I first tried it when I met Klaus in Kiel at the whiskey fair, and he was kind enough to give me the bottles, and we arranged this evening, and I tried all of the new releases, and normally I'm to be honest, I'm not a huge fan of virgin oak because. Most of the time, they are a little bit too harsh for me when it comes to the wood. But it was my favorite between all of the new releases I could try, and I was pleasantly surprised that it's. Hopefully, my memory serves me right. Got a lot of vanilla and sweet flavors in there. But it was at a whiskey fair, so maybe my memory is lacking. But I'm not going into details. Mark can tell you that.
Yeah, and I think that's right. The thing with virgin oak, I suppose, is also depends on the length of time that you allow the whiskey to finish. In our case, this is round about 8 months, and also across the seasons in the United Kingdom, at least. So certainly winter, spring, and summer, and the different kind of cask activity that you get during those periods. But yeah, I agree. I think on the kind of the overall kind of nose and palate profile does include some more kind of dark chocolate, sort of almost. We have something in the UK called bonfire toffee, which is a kind of toffee that's made in November each year, but there's some sweetness but not not kind of sugary sweet. Yeah, and obviously it's a higher ABV, so this is 51.7%. Okay. So, yeah, it's certainly, yeah, 4 percentage points higher than anything else we've tried so far this evening.
It has a distinct dryness in the nose, at least from me.
Yeah, it's like warm wood. I always say it's sandalwood or like sauna, like when you go into a Finnish or a wood sauna. But that's the kind of wood I enjoy. It's not too harsh. It's like warm. Yeah. Okay. Should we give it a try?
Yeah.
Yes.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers.
Du bist wieder zurück, Flo.
I was lost there for a minute, I guess, or for a moment.
It's the dropout evening.
Yeah.
Today, everyone takes a small break.
Fortunately, it's also the return evening. So
yes, usually it's my part to get lost. In the nothingness of German internet connections. Yeah. But I think the mouthfeel is really rich. It's smooth. It's almost buttery, so to say. Not oily, but really
And it has a lot less of this dryness that I would have expected from the nosing. It's really pleasant. It has a lot of sweetness, especially in the middle. And then I think the oak and the virgin oak really kicks in the end, right?
Yeah. Ralf is asking a simple question. He states virgin oak. Who put the bubble gum into the bottle? So you have to. Tell us about your secret ingredients right now.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. I think we obviously we're a fairly young distillery, so we ourselves are still learning things about our spirit and how it behaves in different cask environments. And this is the first what you're trying is a it's the first release that we've ever done. With a virgin oak finish, and we were really pleased with the way this worked out, and there are some sort of really interesting, almost kind of surprising flavor notes that are coming from this, and I have not heard bubblegum before, but certainly various comments around it's a kind of sweetness, kind of vanilla fudge, milk chocolate, for sure. And I'll certainly take bubblegum as an interesting
take on it.
Milk it's chocolate, more the sweet side. And Ralf also added ginger.
For the
spiciness in the end.
Maybe ginger, cinnamon, mace.
Ginger biscuits, maybe, so you get a little bit of sweetness and a little bit of spice, and
and at first I also had a very slight hint of licorice.
I'd agree.
So you said it's an 8-month finish. Was it a complete bourbon maturation before the finish, or was it bourbon and STR?
Yeah, no, it was complete bourbon. So certainly so far we haven't been sort of we haven't been experimenting with any finishes with any of the whiskey that was originally in STR. I think, as you mentioned earlier, STR is quite an active cask, so to some extent doesn't really lend itself to a finish.
We have a question for Klaus about the pricing. And Udo is living in Germany, and I know that. So can you tell us about the price?
Yeah, I'm going to answer that in German. Also die Preise von den Abfüllungen, die UVP liegt in aufsteigender Reihenfolge von 72 bis 79, wo wir sie jetzt gerade in der Reihenfolge, wie wir sie trinken, 72, 76, 76, 79.
Und Max kümmert sich, glaube ich, gerade um seinen Strom, deswegen können wir kurz auf Deutsch bleiben. Ich würde sagen, das ist natürlich kein niedriger Preis, aber ganz, also wirklich ganz unvoreingenommen, wirklich, ich finde, das sind sie wert, ne? Also da ich bin echt sehr angetan von der Qualität einfach. Und das passt.
Also es entspricht auch den englischen Preisen. Also das ist fast 1:1 umgerechnet, sind die Preise, die ich eben dann auch bekomme, um das in Deutschland und Österreich darzustellen. Ich weiß nicht, wie der italienische Preis liegt. Da sind die Sachen teilweise auch jetzt verfügbar. Da kriege ich auch die fairen Preise, dass ich das tatsächlich 1:1 umsetzen kann. Aber wir haben ja schon gehört, die Flasche ist aufwendig. Der gesamte Prozess, der wird wirklich aufwendig und mit viel Herzblut gemacht. Man könnte viel schneller, viel mehr für weniger Geld produzieren. Aber das ist eben ausdrücklich nicht Firmenphilosophie.
Und das merkt man auch. Also das merkt man in jeder von den Abfüllungen. Allein die Unterschiede, wie groß die Unterschiede zwischen den einzelnen Drums sind, das ist enorm, finde ich.
Now you're doing all the praise in German.
I'm doing all the praise in German. So yes. Okay. I'll repeat part of it in English as well. I just praised that you really notice how different all these three drums that we had so far are. You feel, or you can taste, and you feel that they are made with love and with interest and with
passion,
with passion and diligence. You can really feel this. You have this seldomly that you have these differences in mouthfeel, in flavor composition that you get from one distillery, I guess. So there's a really, really strong distinction between these three drums.
Yeah, thank you. We're very passionate as a team about what we're doing, and I guess we're only doing one thing, and it's making whiskey. So yeah, let's try and be considered, you know, at every point we can, and certainly, yeah, for. You know, we spend a long time over decisions around, you know, sort of things we're going to do differently in whiskey making that are generating some interesting flavors, and then choices around cask and whether we think those choices will actually suit our spirit. I mean, for example, you know, we haven't filled a single sherry cask. That was just a decision that, you know, so far we've taken. We've decided there were, you know, other casts that we think are more suitable to our spirit. So, we won't necessarily get every decision right, but it's certainly we spend a lot of time thinking about, you know, hopefully people enjoying the whiskey in years to come, and so the decisions we make today are going to have a significant bearing on that.
I think it's quite a bold decision to not go for sherry casks, because I think you can go down the, let's say, easy way to do a three-year-old whiskey which was matured in a first fill sherry cask, and it's really dark, and you go up to 58% or I don't know, and sell it for £120 and make easy money, because at least in Germany everyone is buying dark whiskeys, and so kudos to you for not doing that and sticking to what you think is right.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of cask choices out there.
Please,
sorry, Klaus, carry on.
Please never do it, but if you do it, send it all to Germany.
Yeah, I was going to say there's a lot of cast choices out there, and but
not because we like it, but people go mad for it.
Yeah. But I think sometimes, you know, just because the variety's out there doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, it's a good decision, you know, going for variety's sake. So anyway, for, you know, rightly or wrongly, yeah, the cast selection is a careful decision, and we yeah, so far we're happy with the results.
And I read on your see on your homepage that you also made gin and rum, so you have a very good source for rum casks.
Yeah, absolutely, Mark. I mean, that's a yeah. I mean, the rum project, just as a slight diversion, was it's really just something that interested us. You know, we had in the main part, we had the equipment to enable us to make rum from scratch ourselves. You know, it's not something that, let's say, the average gin producer in the UK could switch to doing, because they just don't have the kit. And so we thought, well, look, you know, this could be an interesting project, learning how to make rum. So we import a form of dried sugarcane juice from South America, and then we make it all from scratch at the distillery. And there's, you know, it's fascinating just how different it is to making whiskey. But yeah, you're right. One of the really nice things about making rum is that when we do a rum cask finish, and we did one last December, it just has that whole local story kind of amplified, because those rum casks are, you know, had our rum in. And I think, you know, to the best of my knowledge, that's an extremely rare thing in whiskey.
Mm-hmm. We just got another question, completely unrelated to what we're talking about. But now it's getting into the nitty gritty things. So Udo is asking, what is your target group? Because it's definitely hard to separate yourself from competition or competitors. And what do you think is your unique selling point, the core of your distillery? And he adds, there are so many new distilleries.
Yeah. Yeah, and no, I agree. It's a competitive marketplace. I think we don't necessarily have a profile for a target customer. I think we started off with the distillery trying to make the best whiskey we could. We started off trying to make whiskey that we enjoyed, and then, you know, now we feel like we're trying to appeal to people who like what we're doing. They like the way that we're making whiskey. And perhaps, you know, it also kind of resonates with them, you know, where the whiskey is being made and how that kind of informs some of the long-term decisions that we take. So, you know, whether that's young or old, you know, male or female, it sort of matters not to us. I guess we're trying to appeal to people who are making kind of conscious decisions on, you know, where they spend their money on whiskey, and enjoy hearing about what we're doing and enjoy tasting our whiskey. In terms of USP, I think it's a combination of things, and we've spoken about it, but we really focus on provenance and flavor and making considered decisions. And so, you know, that comes down to things like using live yeast. Very few people are doing that in relative terms. Long fermentations combined with the live yeast, again, very few people are doing that in relative terms. You know, why should that matter to our customers? Well, it kind of matters because of the flavors that helps to generate. And then I think at a high level, the lightly peated spirit is certainly in the English whiskey category, we're the only distillery that's doing that. And so that's adding some background flavor and complexity, which I think are some of the things that we've spoken about this evening, which is unique to our spirit. So I would say it's a combination of factors, but I think, you know, all of those things, you know, we've thought about carefully, and we continue to do so.
So maybe maybe we can take the chance and dive into the last drum, the fourth one we have today, because it's you talked about variety.
Already.
You don't already.
I get so much darker chocolate and almost coffee flavors from this one. It's amazing. While we are getting to know the last whiskey. One question that came up in my mind, I just said there are lots of competitors, but from what I learned in whiskey is that there are many distilleries like working together or sharing opinions and knowledge. And I would love to know about how is it in England? So are you in contact with, for example, Cotswolds Distillery or other distillers, or are you all doing your own thing?
We're absolutely in contact with the other distilleries in England. In fact, a small group of us, including White Peak Distillery, we formed a sort of trade organization. It's called the English Whiskey Guild a couple of years ago. And you know, we meet regularly, so 4 or 5 times a year. In fact, we'll be meeting on the 28th of June. Those distilleries that set the guild up take it in turns to kind of host a meeting. But the principle behind that is really to try and uphold good quality standards in whiskey making for the English whiskey category, so that hopefully, you know, as a whole, it's regarded as good whiskey. And if people within England, you know, want to call it English whiskey, then, you know, we think that should mean something. So we think that means that it should be the mashing, the fermentation, the distillation should be taking place in England. And that's not always been the case in some of the other kind of whiskey categories that people will be familiar with. So we are in contact. I think we all feel that, you know, we are small distilleries in the global scheme of things. Trying to, I suppose, establish an English whiskey category, but also to, to some extent to benefit from being sort of almost like stronger together. We're still competing certainly domestically in many ways, but starting a whiskey distillery is hard. And I think so far all of the founders of the distilleries, myself included, are minded to try and work together to find ways of hopefully promoting the English whiskey scene. It's very much, there's very much a dialogue. I think we all have our, the reality is commercially, we all want to sell our whiskey. But I don't think that necessarily means that, we have to, overtly compete with each other. I think there's space for the English whiskey distilleries that are out there, because by and large they're doing interesting things and making interesting whiskey.
I would say we try the double port, and while we do so, I leave you to another question, which you might need a second to think about what you're saying, because Udo is asking, what is your opinion on German whiskey? So I would love to say thank you for being here before we try our last dram, and say cheers one more time. And what's your opinion on German whiskey? Have you tried any?
I tell you what, I won't avoid the question, but I'll just give people a very quick introduction to this final whiskey. So this is double oak port. So this is whiskey that spent a period of time in ex-bourbon, and in fact it was round about 2 years, and then we transferred the aging spirit, so it wasn't whiskey at that time. After 2 years, we transferred the spirit into tawny port casks for a further period of round about 2.5 years. So we didn't use the term finish, because it actually, the whiskey spent more time in port than it did in ex-bourbon, and hence why we've used that terminology, double oak. But the, yeah, it's the strongest spirit we've had tonight, so 52.2%. Even at that strength, we just feel like it's still a, you know, very approachable spirit. Again, in terms of character, you know, Florian was talking about it earlier. I think this, again, is another kind of side to our whiskey, and as for us, our spirit, we just feel it's, you know, it works with these port casks really well. There's a little bit of an introduction to the double oak port, and you know, I'll leave people to nose and taste. In terms of German whiskey, you know, I'll say in all honesty, it's not a category that I'm very familiar with. You know, it's been easy for me to get more familiar with Scotch over the years. It's very close to home, and there's an enormous choice. I think in terms of world whiskey, you know, I'm really interested in what you know, other countries are doing. I haven't really done a deep dive into German whiskey, so I really don't feel qualified to make a kind of a cogent statement about what I enjoy and what I don't enjoy.
So you have to come over here and try some, and do a tasting tour of White Peak whiskey, and also enjoy some German whiskey while you're here.
Yeah, no, a road trip would be great. Yeah. I mean, we were with Klaus earlier this year twice in 1 month. Hey, Klaus.
Yep. Once in Austria, once in Germany. We've been to Graz together, and then to Limburg.
Yeah, the big one.
Yeah,
and there's a couple of other shows that I'm going to. Whenever you want to join in, see a lot of Germany and Austria. There will be, I think the place is called Leoberstorf. Anyhow, it's somewhere just south of Vienna, and then in Germany we will be in Dresden. We will be in Berlin-Köpenick. We will be in Bad Homburg. And there's another talk about Bremen, but that's not confirmed yet. We're still arguing about prices.
Okay. Please come.
Another couple of shows coming, and
Please come to Bremen, because.
Oh, Max. Sorry. Whenever you find the time, ha ha ha.
Please come to Bremen, Klaus, because Florian and me.
It's unfortunately now where I'm sitting. But that you already know them. No need.
there's always a need to try them again.
And maybe to see something new.
I think for the Bremen one, I think Max is closer to Bremen than I am. So because me staying in near the Austrian border, going up to Bremen is 900 kilometers. And so Max might be faster, because I'm carrying all the whiskey, so you can just take the plane. I can't.
Yeah, so
but anyway,
we can all meet. We can all meet up in Bremen.
We'll all meet in Bremen again. So Max, that's confirmed.
Sorry, the connection's gone.
No. I think we have a slight delay with Klaus. But Florian and I won't be in Köpenick this year. So Bremen would be wonderful.
By the way, when you talked about carrying all the whiskey somewhere all through Germany, are all these bottles still available that you were tasting tonight?
Yes, they are actually. And as I'm promoting them hard and keep asking other whiskey shops to stock them, I can now confirm the first success. An online shop, which is quite a popular one, DeinWhisky.de, is stocking all the four whiskies that we have. Well, we stock them as well, obviously, but do encourage other dealers to buy them so I can sell more wholesale. Nothing wrong with that. Another company, which I'm not naming yet, they haven't confirmed, but showed interest in stocking. So we are getting there. So everything's still available. That is for Germany. And no, he only received the bottles yesterday or today. Oh, well, one. Yeah, hey, it's fast. Yeah. Okay, there they are. In Austria, we only have the last three bottles because the batch number three has only been sold to Germany. So it was not available in Austria. That's been my first delivery, batch three. So, and that was, we didn't want to split that to Austria and Germany. So it all went to Germany. Except for this one bottle that I have here in Austria at the moment.
So you've just been invited to Hamburg. Chris is doing the Hanse Spirit every year in January. Big whiskey fair here, the biggest one in Northern Germany. So Chris is living on Orkney. You're welcome here in the northern part as well.
There's also a direct flight from Manchester to Hamburg.
Max is sending to Orkney.
I think Hamburg might be easier.
Ah, could be. Yeah. So, any thoughts about the double oak port you guys want to share? Because I really enjoy it, and now I can't decide whether I stick to my judgment that I like the virgin oak more. But maybe I don't have to decide. I got both bottles here.
I feel the pot has a really huge impact on this one. So I have a lot of raisins. I have a lot of red fruity sweetness, like. There's a dish in Germany called Grütze, Rote Grütze, which is cooked red fruit in a sweet dish, basically. And I think this hits it off really well in all the flavors that we got.
Yeah.
But I got also a little more smoke than I had with the two before.
I just tried to translate Rote Grütze to English, and it said red fruit jelly, which is completely wrong. Yeah, it's like a cooked red fruit stew or something like that, like a dessert thing. It's hard to explain.
It sounds nice.
Yeah, it is.
I think throwing the Yeah, I suppose port often has a certain dryness to it, and I think you're right. That kind of, along with all those fruit characteristics you mentioned, but there's certainly some of that kind of port dryness that's evident.
To me, it's got the strongest mouth feeling, the thickest of the four whiskies we tried today. So it's really not going one special direction is that special, but really when you drink it, oops, the mouth is completely full in a pleasant way. So I really enjoy it, and I really enjoy that it is number four. So the lineup is not just a time-wise lineup, but taste-wise, we were lucky to have it in that timeline. Because this one is, to me, the most mouth-filling of the four.
I think Max knows his stuff.
Well, and interestingly as well,
so Klaus, so the next one better. Sorry.
I was going to say, interestingly though, as well, Klaus, I think as you're aware, we we sold out of the Double Oak port in the UK back in early February, so pretty much the only bottles that exist are with Klaus.
Oh, we're lucky here in Germany.
Yeah.
Maybe we sold out of everything except number 6, as far as I'm aware. The four bottles. I think number 6.
We've probably only got about 50 bottles of number 6 left.
Okay, so sold out tomorrow then.
They're almost ancient species in the UK at least.
So anyone maybe watching
add on the homepage. Not just Italy and Germany, but Austria as well, because batch 6 is available in Austria.
Yeah.
On the homepage, I think you only mention Italy and Germany.
Okay. Yeah.
We'll just fix to get that bit.
So anyone watching should be buying the Double Oak port and send it back to England for a higher price. Get this nice profit margin.
We do get requests from everything.
Sure. Okay, I think we tried all of the whiskey, so it's time for a final verdict. If you guys can decide on what's your favorite whiskey, I would love to hear it. Max, you don't have to decide because I think they are all your favorites. I'm going to start. I think tonight for me it's the last one, but the virgin oak as well is really tasty. And as we said during the small German break where we talked about pricing, I think the quality of every release is wonderful. And well worth every euro you have to pay in Germany for it. So I'm really looking forward to seeing you grow and to see the whiskey grow and getting older. And really looking forward to all the different cask types and things you've planned for us. And I will be with you on this journey for sure. Who would love to share his favorite as well?
Oh, oof, 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 oof. If I have to pick one, I can't.
You have to.
Batch number 3 is sold out. Damn. Nope. Sign me up, please.
Only in England.
So only
everything's still available in Germany.
Excellent. I think the first one or the third one, and the double oak. I think it's would be very pleased by all port fans. But. If I have to pick one, it's probably the virgin oak or the first one, batch number 3.
I still have some left. I can share it with you.
Okay, for me, it's tonight. It's very close, but my personal favorite for tonight is batch number 6. I like these citrus notes. I like this fruity full flavor with a little less on the oaky, being on the little less on the oaky side, but in contrast to that, my second favorite is actually the virgin oak, which is completely the opposite from at least from most of the flavor profile. These are my two favorites tonight, but also very close with the double oak, which was a great drum, really complex and well rounded, and very full of character. I love this all of them, but yeah, I think batch 6 is today my favorite.
Klaus, do you want to add?
I'm I'm not judging them. I'm not picking a favorite because a little bit like Max, I love them all. But obviously, I've got a commercial reason for that as well. So I'm not judging. I'm not picking.
Max, do you want to say something about your favorite, or was I right when I said you? It's maybe it's hard for you to pick one.
Yeah, I think it's hard. I think you know my they're all special in many ways. I mean, I think the various kind of releases we've done are you know kind of. It is interesting how they kind of show different sides to our spirit, but I enjoy port. I kind of enjoy our whiskey. So the combination of those two, I think, you know, certainly does work for me, but I think some of those small batches, I think for the reasons that other people have said of, they're always going to be, you know, close to my heart from our sort of early releases and very much, I think, indicative of our kind of house style.
Okay, so I think it's time to go and to end our live stream today. So we always do a final round of goodbyes, and I haven't told you beforehand, Max and Klaus, that the last words are always from our guests, so think about it. So I would love to say thank you so much for spending your time with us, and I know you guys have a lot of things to do, and it's really wonderful that you took your Friday night off to spend it with us here in Germany on a small little live stream and sharing your whiskey and your passion and your love for the product. I will do a small commercial before we go. So in 2 weeks, we are doing Eberlauer with the German brand ambassador Ike, who is a regular guest on this program and is always here to enjoy his whiskey from Pernod Ricard, and I hope to see you guys all there. And thank you again, Max, for sharing your incredible knowledge and for just being here. And I would love to pass it along to Mark and Florian, and then final words from Klaus and Max. And thank you for everyone watching. Have a great weekend and stay healthy and drink some good whiskeys. Mark.
Yeah, danke. Thanks, Klaus. Thanks, Max, for being here, for sharing the whiskey time and your story. And I want to say to Udo, get out of my head. I thought about German whiskey and compare with new distilleries. Max told about some of your team are from the beer brewery, and in Germany there are from how it's called Obstbrennerei, fruit Obstbrenner,
Schnaps. Just say Schnaps. That's an international word.
yeah, and no, it was a yeah. We had four very delicious whiskeys. Thank you very much, Klaus, Max. Maybe we see on another whiskey. Messe, was noch Messe?
Yeah. In Bremen, it is. There's no way around it. We'll meet. Yeah,
we need to meet in Bremen. Yeah. Also, thank you very much. A heartfelt thank you for everything, for sharing your story, for sharing your insights, for sharing your opinions, and also for providing these four amazing whiskeys that we had tonight. I enjoyed them all, and I love them all, and I'm really looking forward, especially to your local barley bottles. I'm cheering for them. I'm waiting on them. Thank you very much. Have a great evening. Have a great weekend, everyone. Stay healthy.
Yeah, and thank you. Thanks from me as well. I'm currently sitting in Austria in my brewery pub. So you might see some bottles behind me. That's the ones that I'm pouring. I've got a couple of hundred whiskies open here in the pub. And behind the walls, there's the brewery. So yes, we do our own beer. That's why it's called a brewery pub. And at the moment, we are preparing to start the season. So I've done all the painting. That's why my clothes might look a bit, different. And in the brewery, we're going to start distilling whiskey. So look out for Austrian whiskey made by a German, which might take another 3 years or so to be finally sampled as a whiskey. But it'll be 100% homemade in my brewery. And Max, thanks a lot for the wonderful work. And thanks for picking the perfect importer to Austria and Germany.
Yeah, well, look, I'll just finish off, I suppose, by thanking everyone for listening in. It's been great to be invited onto this live stream to just share a little insight into our world. Really pleased to talk about some of our whiskies, and I'm just kind of, when we finish this evening, I'll be looking at flights to Hamburg by the sound of things. we're delighted to have our whiskies available in Germany and Austria. I hope that people have enjoy listening in and maybe enjoy watching this after the fact and finding out a little bit more about what we're doing.
Thank you. Have a great weekend, everyone. Bye-bye.
Good night.